Chris Magnuson, and he's going to be talking about Beep and Metabundle. But before we begin, does anybody have any announcements for today? We usually do, so come on up here and I'll hand over the microphone and you can talk for a little bit, but not too long.
Hi, my name is Mike Higashi, and I'd like to announce that we do have an Install Fest scheduled for January the 27th. That's a Saturday. It'll be at the Robert Austin Computer Show at the Cow Palace in Daly City. So if you need help getting Linux installed or have a friend who needs help, bring the entire system there, and we'll give you some help doing that. It does cost some money to get into the show, so if you want to get an email ticket that will give you a discount, go to the show management's website, that's robertaustin.com. And for information about the Install Fest, that's linuxmafia.com/cabal. I also have one other slightly unrelated announcement that I'm looking for volunteers. I'm in the IT department for the World Science Fiction Convention, which travels around the world, and in the year 2002 it will be in San Jose. So it doesn't come to the Bay Area very often. And we'd like to do a lot of interesting things with technology to help showcase it, because it is, after all, the tech center of the world. And so we'd like to do some really interesting things. And so far, our main developer that we have on staff wants to do things with Java in a proprietary system. and so I would like to see something else. So if you're interested in doing things in, say, PHP or Zope or something like that, and like to help us do something on open source platforms, come see me, please. Please.
Hi, my name is Steve O'Kay. I work for X Personal Trainers in Mountain View, and we are hiring. Jim Dennis over there also works for Axis with me. We're looking for a... oh, really? Okay, so we're looking for a DBA and a sysadmin and possibly one or two other people. We have a small IT group there, not something you would expect to find at a workout place, but the staff there includes two of the people who wrote the Linux System Administrator's Handbook by new writers, and they're very dedicated to open source, almost rabidly so, and it's really a cool place to work at. It's a cool place to work out at, too. Yeah, I'm becoming a buff geek. Who would have ever thought that? And you can't really tell it right now, but really, it is working. really, it's a small core group of very dedicated Linux people, and they're very good at what they do, and really know a lot, and we're doing a lot of really cool stuff. They have four offices around the Bay Area and are looking to expand nationally and eventually internationally, and it will all be done with free software. And we make as few, even within Linux, make as few commercial compromises as possible. So we really, everything, the idea is everything that's developed in-house will go back to the community. So that's pretty much about it.
Okay, how many people know how many hats Heather wears? I'm just going to do three of them in order. In order of the upcoming interesting things. This Thursday is the Bay Lisa meeting. That's the Large Installation System Administrators, which also includes certain flavors of multiple boot installations. Basically, we also welcome people who are interested in getting into large installation issues So come and check us out. We have more details than this at www.baylisa.org. I don't know. Check the webpage. Oh, Mark Tiger. Computer forensics. This is going to be fun. Like, the guy's been a consultant in the security field for like 10 years or 12 years or something. Anyways, it's going to be a blast. This Saturday is the SVLug Install Fest at San Jose's Computer Literacy. And the following Saturday, in addition to being the Cabal's Install Fest, in the afternoon, or if you just can't make it to that, or if you want to arrive to our stuff late, we don't mind. Well, we're the USS Augusta Ada, and you might wonder why a Trek group would matter, but, you know, we're the only group that's exploring the universe of free software, so you should come join us if you decided that your last drive upgrade was a warp drive.
All right, thanks, Heather. And if there are no more announcements... Oh, when is SVLug this month? SVLug already happened this month? Next month, you can go to SVLug. First Wednesday every month. Oh, right. Okay. The Wednesday before first Wednesday of every month. Sounds good. And they always have a really cool speaker, though I don't always go there. So, anyway, without any further ado, let me introduce Chris Magnuson.
Thank you, everybody. I'm happy to be here. I'd like to thank Michelle Krauss for inviting me. It's a pleasure. Thank you, Michelle. Okay, so basically what I'm here to talk about is two things, essentially. Beep, which is our new XML protocol for Internet applications, happens to be one of the latest Internet standards basically pushed through the IETF. And the Internet Management Internet Infrastructure Software Service that depends on the XML protocol for its communication. Okay, let's see if I can get this thing to work. Okay, so here's a little bit about Invisible Worlds. Carl Malamud is the founder and chairman of the company. He's also the guy responsible for Internet Talk Radio way back at the beginning of the 90s. He's a self-described Internet gadfly, and one of his biggest achievements was to persuade the U.S. Government to open the EDGAR database of SEC filings. And actually, the company that I work for came about because of his work with the EDGAR database. Dr. Marshall Rose is the person that I work most closely with. He's famous for flaming people, and he's also famous for the Simple Mail Transport Protocol, Post Office Protocol Version 3, Simple Network Management Protocol, and, of course, the namesake protocol that he wrote, BEEP. Tim O'Reilly is somebody that I communicate with from time to time. He's also on our board. We're a VC-funded company. Our major investors are Reuters, SoftBank, and Eldorado. And I think Tim might have an investment in the company, and I know Carl and Marshall do. And, of course, I'm Chris Magnuson, and my job at Invisible Worlds is the Director of Developer Relations. Sometimes I call myself the director of 8 or 9 things because I've written product requirement documents and done strategic relations and a little bit of fundraising and so forth. I co-wrote Java Enterprise in a Nutshell for O'Reilly. It was actually one of their best-selling books. I wrote the JNDI portions for that. I actually worked on the original JNDI code for Novell and Sun way back in 1996 when we were first talking about a directory services interface. I sort of captured Eric Schmidt's attention at Novell back about a year and a half, 2 years ago, when I wrote a proposal to create an open source initiative for Novell, where we would actually emit to the world through a website called codecore.org that unfortunately never saw the light of day, a significant chunk of intellectual property that we created, most notably the open source Novell directory service that I co-wrote the requirements document for actually pushing that out, scrubbing the code, license requirements. I also co-wrote the Novell cooperative license, which was actually quite an innovative license at the time. I also am the author of the Blocks public license, which is the one that we use for all of our open source intellectual property. Incidentally, the Blocks public license is a basically word-for-word copy of the Apache public license. So I'm not really the author. Okay, so I'm going to basically talk about two pieces of technology here. The first one, of course, is BEAT, Blocks Extensible Exchange Protocol. The second one is the product that we are codenaming MetaBundle. We actually have a trademark filing in progress for the actual product name, and I think everybody will really quite like it, especially the more younger ravers among us. I think you can probably see where that's headed. BEAT is a reusable XML protocol framework. I don't know if anybody here has worked on any protocols, designed any. Anybody? A few people. Basically, what happens when you design application protocols is you basically have to create a whole bunch of infrastructure to make them work right. Framing, flow control, you know, if you have to do multi-channels, you know, authentication, blah, 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 blah. What we've basically done is created a framework that's reusable that basically is 90% of the work that you need to do to create a new protocol. The only thing you really need to do when you're using the BEAT framework is decide what your application needs to say to other applications, and then you design the messages appropriately for that application. MetaBundle is basically knowledge management infrastructure with internet class scalability and flexibility. I can read just as well as anybody else. The notion is that you know, there's a whole bunch of software out in the world right now that's pretty much runs the internet. You've got the DNS, the bind code that lives at Internet Software Consortium, the DHCP reference implementation. Sendmail is sort of the reference implementation of an SMTP peer. And basically what we're trying to do is position MetaBundle as something pretty much equivalent to that, something that lives in the internet software space that just is there. It's ubiquitous. You connect on port PIN 288 and you ask for the profile for give me some knowledge, and it will just cough up some stuff that's useful to you, hopefully. MetaBundle actually scales to terabytes. We've had terabytes of data running in our office. We have the entire Edgar database that basically we get gigabytes of updates every day from the the SEC that manages that. So we're very assured that this puppy can scale well. MetaBundle uses the BEAT protocol. We use the SEP2, it stands for Simple Exchange Profile, version 2, profile, and the Blocks Replication Protocol for moving data around and for replicating data among MetaBundle running instances. We also have Marshall authored one of the two main contenders for internet standard internet messaging communications, and that's APEX, Application Exchange Framework. And it's a profile that lives inside the BEAT framework. We're basically trying to get people to use it. We're actually doing some porting and getting some open source IM applications using this thing to kind of jumpstart that. So why BEAT, why MetaBundle? Why did we go to all this trouble to do this? There are a million protocols. Look at some other, you know, proprietary knowledge management infrastructure and maybe use that. Why do we go to all this trouble? I'm going to answer the MetaBundle version first. If you connect to port 25, you know how to talk to that service. 23, you know how to talk to that service. 21, you know, there's some services there. You get FTP, you get file transfer, you get mail and web and so forth. But the problem is that you just can't search the internet. It's just not really searchable until you, fire off a whole bunch of robots, and people hate that. You know, you have all these robots crawling around, and, you know, people don't like that. And, you know, there ought to be some way of basically managing that knowledge without having to introduce really obnoxious, offensive pieces of software crawling your private website. Also, we looked and really didn't see any good solution for managing terabytes of dynamic data. There just wasn't anything out there that we saw that could really pull it off, so we figured we had to write it. So when Carl decided that he needed to do this, he basically said, well, let's look at protocols, which one fits Marshall. Marshall looked at everything and said, well, there's really just not a good fit. None of the other protocols are really heavyweight enough. SMTP wasn't, and HTTP really wasn't. You know, you need to be able to talk multiple channels over a session, and stuff like that. Blah, 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 blah. So we basically figured we had to do all this stuff in scratch, which made a lot of sense when you think about it. So basically, being the nutshell writer, I'll talk about BEAT in a nutshell, although there is no O'Reilly book coming out about it, at least not yet. The notion is that BEAT is really a heavy lifting XML-based peer-to-peer protocol. It's actually a basically the first IETF standard peer-to-peer protocol that's been written. It's been explicitly written for peer-to-peer communications. You hear a lot about P2P and so forth, and this is the bomb. This is the standard. We have this snap-in application profile architecture where you can basically, like I said before, look at your application's communications requirement, write a message that basically describes, or write a profile that describes messages that the applications know how to exchange, and you plug it into the profile or to the framework, and voila, your application knows how to use the rest of the framework because it's a snap-in to an existing protocol architecture. The BEAT protocol is completely flexible and extensible. It is basically an XML protocol, but you can actually drop out of XML and move any arbitrary MIME entities. In fact, the MIME entity that is preferred is XML, but you could do, you know, you could do blobs of data, you could do sound, whatever, it really doesn't matter. The other thing is that it's really naming model independent. What that means, I actually should have put that under the bullet item single sign-on, because basically you use an authentication model for whatever directory service or user database that you like. The one that we work with natively is Sazzle. I don't know if anyone here uses Sazzle. But you could just as easily, underneath Sazzle, put in, for example, the Novell Modular Authentication Services or any other proprietary thing you want to pick up. Basically, it multiplexes. You have one session between two peers. And inside that session, you have one-to-end channels of communication. So channel zero is actually a control channel that basically handles the framing and so forth. But you can have up to some insane number of channels running over a single authenticated connection. The other thing is, this thing was designed from the start by Marshall and myself to be open source and open standards. Marshall is sort of, I kind of describe him as the Speaker of the House. If the IETF is the Congress, Marshall's the Speaker of the House, America. And he's just, you know, got a lot of respect because of his heavy lifting over the years. So it's, of course, an internet standard. So anyway, we've got the internet drafts published. The working group has basically said we should move this work to RFC status. That means that this will be, well, it should be all things, you know, I'll cross all of our fingers here. It should be internet standard in the next few months or so. So BEAT's peer-to-peeritude. What is the peer-to-peer nature of BEAT? Basically, any peer can initiate a channel. You don't have to have a client or a server. A peer at either end can be a client and a server at the same time, which is basically the notion of peer-to-peer. Any peer can send a message or deliver a message to any other one at any time. You know, like I've been saying, multiple independent channels. So if I have, you know, five channels operating, I can be doing some heavy lifting on one channel, you know, moving around a couple bytes at a time on the other one, and the second channel with the light payload will actually, you know, not starve the data, which is pretty cool. Asynchronous message delivery. And the other thing is it can be client-server if you like. There's no reason why it couldn't be, being a peer-to-peer framework. So here's basically the peer framework architecture. And it's a little fuzzy, but basically what I'm going to describe here is the bottom is the bottom layer is the operating system that this thing runs on. Linux is our favored nation operating system. We actually have a favorite distribution that we use that I will not name because I don't want to play favorites. FreeBSD, Marshall's actually sort of a BSD fanatic, and he likes one flavor in particular. We'll probably do a FreeBSD, reference implementation. Mac OS X, I actually use that every day. Now the public beta, I like that. We'll port to that. And we actually have some ActiveX, we actually have some Windows code that supports this stuff. Basically, once you've got those operating systems covered, then you'll want to cover languages and platforms. Actually, I should have put Apache 2 in the platform. We're actually, we sponsored a source exchange project about 9 months ago, where we actually paid some people to develop a client, or actually a server version of the BEAT framework, actually the predecessor to the BEAT framework. But we're basically turning Apache into a peer for BEAT, so it can initiate, you know, it's a server, it's not theoretically supposed to initiate messages, but now Apache can, now that we're going to write the Apache module. We're also got what we're calling BeatWide for Java, for C, for Tickle, for Python, and I can't see what that last one is. Python? Anyone? Oh, ActiveX, okay. So basically, on top of these languages, we've got an authentication and privacy layer. There are really two components to this. One is the authentication model that we use, and that's Sazzle. I would describe that. The privacy model is TLS. We basically describe that as an armored pipe. It's pretty much standard. Everybody uses it. On top of that, you pretty much have, you know, the application communication layer. This is where the applications exchange messages and, you know, hi there, oh, hi, I see you, and, you know, what do you want to do now? I want to do this, so forth. The four that I've mentioned up there are SEP2, SQL. We actually have a SQL profile, so you can actually perform SQL queries against a knowledge management server using just the SQL syntax you know and love. Apex instant messaging profile. Basically, anybody who implements this layer is able to do instant messaging internet standard. And then anybody here that likes RPC-style communications through HTTP but doesn't necessarily want to incur the wrath of system administrators with firewalls and proxies blocking your Napster programs, you know, that are overloading HTTP, we actually have a SOAP module that we're thinking about writing. And this will basically enable all of these ubiquitous ActiveX communications to be managed inside of, well, basically managed at the firewall by saying, hey, gosh, I don't want this SOAP application to run, but I want this other one to be able to run. That's infrastructure that hasn't been built yet, and it's something that we think will solve a lot of problems with, you know, people running viruses over SOAP over HTTP. I mean, Windows is sort of a platform for viruses, right? And then, of course, the beef application basically links all this stuff in. We might find a more elegant solution for that later. Basically, all those little blue boxes are profiles. Those are basically the equivalent of just a regular old profile that, or protocol. But the notion is that, you know, if you write this application communication, it just snaps in and you don't have to write all that baggage. The other thing is I've got a little kind of a database-looking thing off the side that's talking to that SASL module. That's basically a directory service or a database of users. Anyone who uses OpenLDAP might have played with SASL talking to OpenLDAP. JNDI providers do that too. We're actually talking to one open source directory service distribution or code base. I forgot the acronym. You had to ask me for that. I was just trying to remember that. There you go. Secure Authentication Socket Layer Library. You can plug Kerberos into that. Yeah, it's basically encryption and authentication. And the naming model depends on what DS lives under the hood. So we figured if we covered SASL, we covered 80% of the stuff. Go ahead. It could be if you wrote some sort of a Telnet-style thing over it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's something maybe somebody should write. Oh, is that right? Don't you love packet snippers? So it makes sense that people would probably use this to, you know, solve some of those problems. So anyway, that's, you know, the graphical user interface, the graphical view of our architecture. See if this thing comes back here. Computer. Okay. Thanks. Transparent aluminum. Okay. So Metabundle, this is the code name for our software product. The version that we're going to give away is the one I'm describing here. We're actually going to create kind of a pro version or an extreme version. It'll have some proprietary code bundled in, but rest assured that every improvement that we make to the core Metabundle code base will actually get reflected back out to the source tree at some point. So it's kind of a little bit dense, so I don't know if you can read it, so I'll see if I can do a good job explaining this stuff. Like I've been saying, this is new knowledge management infrastructure. It's based on metadata. Basically, what happens is that I'll just really quickly describe what happened. We have this sort of three-tier architecture. We have two layers talking to a server. One layer sort of extracts knowledge from a data space. Data space could be email, it could be a database, it could be a website, it could be whatever. And the knowledge it extracts is actually formed, or actually kind of put together in an XML document in ways that hopefully the people writing these things will find, you know, it's useful for a lot of people who want to search this data. It's stored in the server in as a well-formed XML document we call a block. And then basically what layer of the architecture that talks to the server, also called a builder, will actually query the database or query the space server, the server, and ask for a certain, you know, for a certain kind of a set of, you know, queries. and the server will respond with, oh, I found these things. I'm going to pass it through an evaluation step in the pipeline. The evaluation step will actually run a script in a secure sandbox and then perform some sort of evaluation on it, whatever people want to do, and then pop up a result set in whatever format or protocol is required. In any case, the reference implementation of this thing is aimed at internet software infrastructure like DNS and DNS bind, DHCP, blah, 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 open LDAP, so forth. Basically, there will be sort of a native directory service or user database in this thing so that we can have personalized user accounts. The one that's going to go out the door first is going to be based on Apache's htaccess. It works, it's not too complicated. But the notion is that people with their proprietary directory services that scale up to billions of nodes will be able to snap them in underneath this thing and have no issue. There's a persistent fetch module to this thing where you basically submit a query to the server, and the server kind of runs this persistent fetch at specified intervals, and then when it gets a result, it'll actually match it against a set of rules in a rules engine. And when a match hits a particular rule, it can say, oh, if I got this type of a result with these sort of parameters, I want an instant message. And if I get this other kind of result, I'm not quite so interested in that. I'll just get an email, and I can check it when I get back to the office. And then I want a summary file of all of the persistent fetches that have been running. I'm going to dump it out in the RDS site summary format, which is sort of the summary boxes that we see on pages and so forth, or any other reporting format that you really like. So the notion is that if you hook up this software platform to instant messaging and to email and to web pages, then you basically get what we're calling data or knowledge awareness. So basically, you can program this layer of the infrastructure to blast out knowledge to you wherever you think you need it, it's the most important place that you're going to need it at that time. And so, one thing that you might be able to do with this, for example, is, something I've been thinking about a lot, I'm doing a lot of traveling, maybe I want to stay in the office a couple of hours longer, but I have to be on the phone constantly to check on the web, near a computer, in other words, to check whether or not my flight's been delayed. If it's been delayed 4 hours, then I'm going to make a mad dash to the airport and sit around for 4 hours. It doesn't make any sense. So what I want to do is basically load this thing up with a rule that says that if Delta delays this flight that I'm going to be on, I want you to send an instant message to my cell phone. And so I can look at my cell phone, if it beeps and say, oh, got delayed. Otherwise, I'm going to make a mad dash to the airport and be on time for the plane. So that's the kind of thing you should be able to do with this when this thing's all said and done. Okay, next page. Basically, the code that we create, the intellectual property of the company that we're going to release as open source will be covered by the Blocks public license. Of course, it's the BSD derivative. I actually picked that on purpose. I did not use the GPL. And the reason why is that, having looked at some of this internet infrastructure in the past, most of it's covered by a Berkeley-style software license. And the reason for that is, I know this pretty well because I worked for a very conservative company for a few years, and that's Novell. Anything that's covered by the GPL, it's scary. They don't get it somehow. And, there's a lot of fear about it that I just didn't want to have to deal with a lot of corporations. So, maybe at some point in the future we'll look at a dual licensing path or something like that. But for now, it's going to be a BSD that's not a license. Linux is definitely our native operating system. Like I said, we have sort of a favorite distribution. But we're also going to run on BSD, Mac OS X. Eventually, we'll get around to Windows 2000. So anyway, the notion is that Metabundle, for optimum acceptance by the community and basically market penetration, I told Marshall, look, we could do a Java space server, a Java server, we could do this, we could do that, but we really ought to do this in the Apache to web server. Because it's already BSD licensed, there's already a lot of infrastructure there for memory management and threading, and we won't have to screw around with pthreads and just use whatever's in Apache, so forth and so forth. So we're basically going to do that. So we're going to actually, one of my favorite colleagues and I are actually going to be talking to the Apache guys pretty soon about actually working directly on the Apache code to try to help them make that bulletproof so that we can run our terabytes of metadata inside of the Apache 2 server. Basically, the interface between Apache 2 and Metabundle is mod_beep. Anybody here, an Apache programmer, knows about module APIs. Basically, we're going to use Apache to get our platform reach. I think this just makes sense. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't take advantage of this. We're giving away open source software anyway. You have smart people at this meeting. That's exactly the case. Apache 2 will actually be sort of the focal point for all of the future profiles that will be internet standard that will be based on ITF, blah, 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 beep stuff. So instant messaging, all of a sudden Apache will be an instant messaging server. Pretty cool, I think. Go ahead, Arthur. Very interesting. Yes, it could. There are a whole bunch of messaging things that we're planning to do with this. One is intrusion detection. One is there's a syslog. There's a whole bunch of other messaging stuff. Basically, we're thinking also about using Apex as an RPC mechanism so that you can basically punch through space and talk to a device using Apex and do all kinds of crazy stuff. Go ahead. It's very possible to do that. It's very compatible with a low bandwidth environment. We also are thinking about creating a version of the beep library that's pretty low footprint, so it'll fit in the memory size of small devices. Well, maybe that's a reason for them to become stateful. I think that probably it probably won't support that kind of stuff. But, what I ought to do is put you in touch with Marshall and have you ask him. I think it would make a lot of sense that maybe there should be some way to handle that. So maybe there is. Well, before I leave and you leave, ask me for my email address, and I'll give you Marshall's email address. You can head talk to him. Say again. Well, we're real interested in applications for this thing. So the next thing is that I talked about Apache 2 giving Metabundle the broad platform reach. The other thing is that, gosh darn it, there's a lot of knowledge that needs to be managed that lives in the HD docs directory of a running Apache 2 web server. So it looks like that we're going to be able to kind of find an installed base or some ready-made knowledge for us to start managing. And I've actually had some conversations with the guys that run the RSS mailing list, which is actually a really cool new syndication model. And we're actually going to bolt those libraries, the XML RPCs, on top of this thing. So jumping on ahead, Metabundle supports two data models. I'm going to actually draw some pictures here about the data models. One of them is what we call the exchange model, basically two peers. And one emits a query, the other responds at the result set. The result set is, it's a subset of whatever data that the other peer has, right? I mean, you don't necessarily want all the data if you're just asking for some of it. But sometimes you do want all the data, and you want perfect concurrency, so you get replication. Anyone here follow the LDOOP standards work? Anyone know about replication? LDOOP, isn't that what I said? LDOOP-A? Okay. In any case, that's an LDAP replication model. Ours is more of a general purpose replication model for this thing. Okay, so here's the blocks exchange model. Basically, on the left in that column over there, it's a little bit cut off. We have this notion of data spaces, and that's just basically where the data lives. The stuff that basically we want to ask, hey, what do you have? We want to represent your knowledge and store that in a server. So we have these little agents called mixers, and basically the administrator who runs a running Metabundle instance will be able to say, gosh, I don't really want mixers talking to me, so I'm going to deny all access to mixers that I don't like. And maybe I'll, if I'm an administrator, maybe I'll have a group in the directory that says, mixers that I do like and, people that, I know and I've given accounts to, and those mixers can ask me for certain kinds of data. We actually have sort of a subtree scheme. It's a lot like the Usenet namespace, where you, you know, like all thought something about something. And we basically store all the knowledge in that namespace, and you can have very, very granular access controls over the knowledge in that namespace using the directory service and authentication model. In any case, what happens is these mixers extract knowledge by basically saying data space, what you have that looks at the data, you know, document by document or email message by email method, will use some sort of a artificial intelligence algorithm or just intelligence gathering algorithm to say, you know, what's some important metadata that I need to know about, and it'll actually forward that metadata in the form of a block over this heavy lifting protocol framework. And it'll store it in the Metabundle server that's running on some server platform someplace. Basically, the Metabundle server has a special database that's allocated just to store an index of all of the blocks that are stored on the server. And so every time a new block comes in over the wire, the index gets updated, and the block that's stored in the server gets a different serial number and so forth. Pretty straightforward stuff. So that's basically the mixer part of the exchange model. Now we also have the builder part of the exchange model. Basically, the builder consists of course, the server that supports queries on the index. The builder could be a web client. It could be an application, you know, peer, so forth and so forth. The HTTP client, since it obviously doesn't talk beep, we have a gateway that basically you can have an HTTP put. You can ask it a question in HTTP, and the gateway will transform that into an SQL query. The Metabundle server will actually say, oh gosh, I got this query here. Let's see if I've got any results that match this query. And if I do, let's push them, you know, over the, let's push them into the evaluation toolbox or the evaluation sandbox, which is basically, right now it's a tickle process that runs that's safe. And we have one evaluation script called Luminance. It's sort of a sample. Basically says, I've got this result set, and I've got this keyword. How many times is this keyword mentioned in this result set? And if there's a result set, you know, this document mentions it 22 times, and it's 10 times more, you know, the other, you know, the next nearest match is 2, and it's more than, you know, 10 times more luminous in that document than it is in the next one. And so you get back this sort of luminance rating. There are plenty of other ones. We're talking to people who are actually writing evaluation scripts for the pipeline right now, and lots of people have things they want to do. In any case, what happens is when that evaluation script gets run, the result set gets sent back to the peer or the web client, either as an HTTP message or as a just a native SCP message. So that's basically exchange model. Go ahead. That's something that would probably be have to. That's something that would probably be have to written would have to be written as a custom profile, I guess. We actually haven't written a profile like that. If you send me some mail, I'll talk to Marshall and see if he wants to write one. If not, then we'll help you do it. It's pretty straightforward. I think there are about 7 questions you need to ask, and you know, I don't remember them off the top of my head. And in any case, I'm not the protocol head of the company, so. But it's fairly easy. Marshall showed me how to do it. It's pretty straightforward. They actually live in the Apache 2 server in a custom module that we've written that will do that. So they're run in the sandbox in the Apache 2 web server. You can actually push evaluation scripts into the toolbox. So because they're run in the server, you know, you want to have a secure environment for that to happen. So what we've got is a toolbox, so you can push an evaluation script in there. And you know, run it on sort of an on-demand basis. So does that make sense? You can. Correct. Yeah. That's probably the most useful application for this thing, because you know the server is not going to have every evaluation script that anyone's going to want to run. So it's also basically up to the system administrator, you know, to decide, you know, whether or not he or she wants to allow that sort of thing to happen. And that granularity is, you know, possible with the Beat protocol. Okay, so I'm going to move on ahead. So basically, this is the replication model. We're calling this, gosh darn it, the Block Replication Protocol, or BRP. We were calling it antacid, but you know, I think BRP is a little bit more succinct. Basically, it's a general-purpose data replication protocol. Right now, there's blocks, which are blocks of metadata. There's no reason why it couldn't do, you know, DSML MIMEPDs or, you know, Microsoft Word documents or whatever basically you wanted to push around. So basically, the way it works is that the administrator of this MetaBundle server is in total control over how this thing works, you know, who's allowed to connect and so on and so forth. Basically, what we create what's called federation agreements, which is basically run from a GUI console that says, gosh, I'm going to allow this person over here to federate with some subset of the block's namespace, but these guys over here, I don't like them, they're not going to be able to do that. And the notion is that you can set up these private replica rings that you can share valuable content, and because you have this authentication model that's plugged into a directory service, you can take a look at any time some piece of data goes over the wire to somebody, that you can maybe charge somebody for it, or you know, whatever you really want to do. So basically, there are two types of replication. There's sort of database style replication that's transactional, you know, the atomic, you know, transaction sort of a thing, and you know, if the power goes out and you know, restart it in the middle of a transaction, you roll it back and you know, start it all over again. That's good for when you have these you know, databases that are living really closely together. But when you have stuff that's running over the net, you want sort of loose concurrency. So we do sort of a novel directory services style replication where you know, it might take 8 hours to actually replicate some subset of the namespace to the office in Tokyo, but you know that if the power doesn't go off, that eventually they'll all converge on the same data set. So the notion is that you can run this stuff over a low bandwidth connection, LANs and so forth. Okay, so there's that. So basically, here's the architecture of this thing. Basically, on the upper left is the Mixer framework. The Mixer framework is basically a programmatic framework for how you plug a knowledge extraction tool into this architecture. You know, you basically have a doc management system. There's the Microsoft Tahoe thing that's coming out, and you know, maybe there's a web dev enabled web server, and maybe you've got, you know, file server that's the database. In any case, these data spaces can be basically mixed by these agents, and we can, you know, we're working on some specific formats. Right now we're mixing XML and HTML documents. We want to actually extend that to support specific DPDs, the Dublin Core and the RDF, and then basically any well-formed XML. We should be able to mix this thing and, you know, store the metadata in the server. So basically what we've done is we've created this API that anyone can write to. It's open source, right? There are a whole bunch of people out on the planet right now that are really good at writing knowledge extraction tools. I mean, just like spectacular. So this is something we're just not going to touch. We're basically in the infrastructure business. We're not AI providers. So we're making it easy for these guys to plug into our stuff. We're actually in negotiations with one company that has, we think, some of the best stuff out there. And we hope to ship a commercial version of this stuff with their Mixer technology running inside of it. In any case, the API is pretty straightforward stuff. It's, you know, written in whatever language you really like, C, Java, ActiveX, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, it plugs into the Beef peer framework so that it can communicate with the MetaBundle server. And really, for that matter, any other Beef-enabled peer. So basically, here, the bottom of this thing is the MetaBundle server diagram. Mod underscore Beef is the Apache 2 module that handles all this stuff. Basically, like I said, turns Apache 2 into a peer, which is kind of a cool thing. Then we have the evaluation sandbox. We're writing that in Pickle. We have plans to actually do a Java version of that, and you should be able to push evaluation scripts into the sandbox. Let me see what that says. Anyone can read that? Persistent fetch, that's right. The persistent fetch module lives inside of there. Basically, that just stores your fetch and runs it all the time, and And you know, when it gets a result set, it passes on to that thing underneath there, the rules engine, says if I get this kind of results in my IAM client, blah blah blah. We first talked to htaccess, and we also talked to Postgres. Postgres is, I believe, covered by a BSD license agreement. MySQL didn't work because it didn't do record-level locking. Or was it row-level locking? I can't remember which. So if they fix that, we'll ship it with MySQL. In any case, we'll probably make a deal with OpenLDAP, or you know, they'll live inside there too, but that's probably for the future. So the builder framework, basically on the top, we have sort of the programmatic model that people are used to. XML RPCs, people like those these days, RSS, RDF Site Summary works using that. DCOM and Java 2 Enterprise Edition, people like those, so we're going to support those. Obviously, those run on top of HTTP, RMI, and DCOM. We've already got DCOM, HTTP, and RMI support running. The Builder API is basically an abstraction of all the things that people need to... people who are writing new plugins for builders will be able to use to write new ones. That's under development currently. And, of course, the ubiquitous BeepLive peer framework. So that's basically the structure of the MetaBundle architecture. And note that pretty much everything in here that we create is going to be open source. So you can just download it, modify it, you know, to paste, whatever you need to do. So basically, I figured I'd take some stuff from sort of an old presentation that I did for the board a while back, and this is basically kind of a diagram of what a portal would look like that was MetaBundle enabled. You'd have a portal that was running someplace on the internet, you know, Yahoo or LookSmart or blah blah blah, and you've got users creating content, editorial people creating content, and they're using custom applications that are Beep enabled, or maybe they're using a web front end. In any case, this data that they're creating gets pushed into a server farm. And we all seen, you know, the rack servers with tons and tons of 1U and 2U units running, blah, blah, blah. These things have mixers that are constantly running. You can have more than one mixer running on any data space. You can have, you know, one to N mixers, basically as much as your CPU and memory can support. These are all extracting metadata and knowledge from the data that's living on these disks, and storing them in a sort of a closely, a transactional replicated collection of MetaBundle servers running in a replica ring. And so basically these things are basically doing the divide and conquer strategy. When you've got, you know, so much data that you can't put it all in one server, you want to have one, you know, N servers to hold all that data. That's one application for the replication technology. In any case, you can query that replica ring of MetaBundle enabled servers using our SEP2 and Beep protocol that talks to a directory service to get authentication information, talks to the rules engine and the persistent fetch engine. And so basically, portals will be able to take this open source software and build some pretty intense value added knowledge products on top of this. Go ahead. Which one? Oh, SEP2 is our second iteration of our simple exchange profile. It's basically the query language for Beep, or the one that, you know, we like the best. We also support SQL. So theoretically, you could do a SQL query on this MetaBundle replica ring and get back what you needed. We also, for that matter, we can do SQL at the same time using the simple join profile. We can do SQL, the Verity, I call it the Verity Query language because it kind of rolls off the tongue. But Verity Query language, you can do the simple exchange profile 1 and 2, and you can actually mash the results together in a single result set using a simple join profile. Kind of cool. And in any case, when you do this query, it'll actually shove out this data, you know, according to the rules that you've submitted to the rules engine. It'll say, you know, here's my airplane flight delay information, send it to my cell phone, and this other thing about my stock, and I'll just check that on my RSS file, and it'll send me an email that so-and-so is, you know, querying my website. That's basically what portals will be able to do with this. It's all open source. I'll describe a little bit of the business model here. We think that people are going to download this stuff. They're going to find it pretty useful out of the box, the same way people find mail servers and web servers useful. But knowledge management really is a services-intensive industry. You really have to know a lot about some particular kind of data to really write a good mixer. You just have to know the data formats. And gosh darn it, we happen to have some of the best BPD writers in the business. We hired them all from LexisNexis, who do all of that stuff, you know, writing, you know, basically for, you know, converting content from one format to another so that LexisNexis users can query it. So we've got all those guys working for us now. So basically, that's the anatomy of a MetaBundle-enabled portal. So I'll just kind of wrap this bad boy up by describing Beep and MetaBundle as open source projects covered by the BSD license. Beep is a heavy lifting XML internet standard protocol. It's an XML native thing. It's like SNMP and SMTP, that caliber of protocol. MetaBundle, programmable knowledge management infrastructure. You can do RSS summaries. You can get a web page of summaries. You can send mail to your mail client. You can have MetaBundle, you know, instant message or cell phone and so forth. Native operating system is Linux. And we do already have, it's been up and running for about 8 or 9 months, a repository of all of the code that we've created for the Beep Live frameworks and so forth at bxp.org. So there you go. That's the deal. Any questions? Yes. Well, the problem is that Beep.org is pagan. So I tried to sue them, but, you know, we would lose. So I no point in harassing innocent people just because we were slow on the draw trying to get that domain. So for now, it's going to be bxp.org. Maybe I'll get, you know, beep.ck or beep.ws or some silly thing. But, you know, I kind of like that. Maybe Beep framework that Marshall created, .org or something like that. Sure. Validation? Do we validate messages against the DTD, you mean? Yes. Yeah, we have a DTD for the blocks protocol. That's actually part of the RFC that's coming up. Yes. We're running terabytes of data. So by object-based protocols, you mean like CORBA or RMI kind of stuff? It's a very good question. If you're talking about something like an RPC style of communication, the answer is that you can do that inside of Beep. Beep is, we consider our RPCs to be closely coupled. Basically, they're really meant to be run over a lot of bandwidth where you have really strict control over your network environment and so forth. Over the internet with all its unpredictable conditions and so forth, you really want loosely coupled, where you send a message and, you know, you can do other things while you're waiting for the message to come back if for some reason, you know, people are downloading, you know, porn or Napster stuff or whatever. So, there's no reason why you couldn't run RPC style communication inside of this thing. It's just, you know, you're subject to the nature of the internet. SOAP is actually a closely coupled RPC style object communications protocol. And we actually do a lot of benefit to SOAP. SOAP running over HTTP gets one channel. Go ahead. No, it's pretty traditional. No. Would you like us to do it? We could. I mean, it might work for now. If you actually delivered it, maybe I would. I'd be happy to, you know, pay somebody that delivers it. That's great. So I'll sign you up. All right. So who's next? You up in front? Did you start a question? Oh, we actually have our internal code name for MetaBundle. Actually, the first customer deployment of MetaBundle is the Roadrunner project. So you kind of pegged it from that one. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell Warner Brothers. Did you guys hear about that Apple code name? They had code names in product, Carl Sagan, and then he sued them and won, and then they changed it to Butthead Astronomer, and then he lost because it could have been any old Butthead Astronomer. So. In this case, it really is the one and only Roadrunner, and I kind of warn them against it. But as long as we don't tell that many people, I guess I'll do that one already. So. All right. I don't care. Slow. Lilaris. Yeah, we actually started out as that being our native platform, but now it's Linux. Oh, you know, I'm an idiot. I forgot to mention Perl. That was actually one of our first supported languages, was the space kit for Perl. So, yeah, we actually do support Perl. In fact, we're trying to find a really good Perl programmer who will, like, you know, do this stuff for us. So, yeah, anybody know any Perl programmers or protocol heads? Any other questions? You done? Well, thank you guys very much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot. We've got lots of good stuff to give away today, so if you'll hold on just a sec. Does somebody want to draw numbers here so we can keep this fair, or I'll just pick them. Oh, hey, we've got something else. You can draw numbers.
So I just renewed the Baylug.org domain. And for all of you people who actually still use Network Solutions, they send you a T-shirt. This is one of a kind, and it is authentic Baylug.org merchandise.
Wow. First Baylug T-shirt ever, I think. No?
Oh, right.
Second official Baylug T-shirt.
One of these.
Sounds good.
So this is for the Caldera guys. Were really great. They sent off some of these Linux technology previews. Something called the Linux 2.4 kernel coming out real soon. So, you know, they burned a whole bunch of CDs with 2.3 dot something on it. It was a 2.4 free and X386 4.01, and yeah, well, you know. Anyway, they were really nice, and they sent us a whole bunch of them, so we're gonna, and some other stuff in there, yeah, too. So we'll give them away. All right, so the first winner is 8072137. Sweet. Give it to the man standing up. You look suspicious. Can I see your ticket? Okay, next. 8072170. Sweet. Andrew, there you go. Okay, next. 8072142. Anybody? All right, you lose. All right. 8072159. Sweet. Congratulations. Well, you have a trustworthy face. 8072171. 2171.
For your free copy of the Linux Technology Review. Okay.
All right. 807-2132. Sweet. Another winner. All right. Next is 8072. Gee, these are really familiar. 1-6-3. All right. Okay. 8072. 1-4-0. All right. Man up front. Okay. 8072-1-4-4. All right. We get out to them, man. That's what you're going to get the people. 8072135. All right. Give it to the man with the yellow hair. Sweet. 807-2128. All right, we're into the t-shirts. Let's show us the t-shirts.
And if you come to the Trek meeting, we'll have a bunch of them.
All right. She'll give you the one off her back. All right. Fresh t-shirt smell.
Open Linux Power Solutions.
In fact, the popular Caldera Rock Climber. What? It's a mascot. So I'm not gonna talk about their shop price. Okay. Hang on! Okay. Who's next? 807 for one of these beautiful t-shirts. 2176. Sweet. A newcomer. For one that has not been despoiled by my hands. Which isn't, you know. Can't wash that, right? 807-2141. Oh, Miguel. How many more we got? We got a crap load of stuff this week, man. Should we just save some of this for next week? Next month.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't hear a resounding aw or anything like that either. It's up to you. You want us to save them? We'll save them. $10 more next month. 807-2152. 2152. I guess nobody really wants it, huh? All right. 807-2139. All right. All right. How many more do you have here? Two? All right, two more and then the Baylug t-shirt. All right. 807-2133. Sweet. Okay. And for the last, rock climbing Caldera t-shirt. Eight oh 7-2127.
Wow.
All right. Okay, so here we go. Wow. Everybody, please give a hand to the Caldera guys in absentia. I mean, it's pretty cool of them to give us all this good stuff. All right, so for the Baylug.org unique t-shirt, and the winner is... Eight oh 7-2169. Hey, Jennifer, all right. Congratulations. Oh, whoever gets it. That's it, I think, right?
Okay, we can hang out till 10 o'clock, but we got to be out by then. I don't know who our speaker for next month is. Who does? Paul Morgan from Lutris.
Now he's committed.
Sounds good. And are there any more announcements? Anybody last minute announcements? Okay, sounds good. We'll... And I guess we'll see you next week. And feel free to hang out here until 10. And next week, next month... That's right, at Linux World. And, yeah, people sometimes hang out at Max's afterwards. So if you don't have anything else to do this evening...